Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, April 3rd, 2019. South Sudanese narrate their experiences in the hands of health professionals in Juba.
When 9 p.m. came, we went to the nurse to remind her to come and, you know, put the medicine on the baby. Again, the nurse said that she cannot put the medicine. The medicine will be given at 1 a.m. in the night.
And the head of the UN mission in South Sudan is calling on the government and the opposition to continue implementing the peace deal.
And it's very good. It's good to see the IO coming into town. There's workshops that are jointly being held between opposition groups and the government.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's President Salva Kiir and SPLM-IO leader Riek Machar are expected to travel to the Vatican next week for what the Holy See is calling a spiritual retreat. Vatican spokesman Alessandro Gissuti confirmed the visit on Wednesday. He said a spiritual retreat was scheduled next week at the Vatican for the leaders of South Sudan. He did not identify them or cite any political initiative. The meeting comes a month after President Salva Kiir met with Pope Francis to discuss the peace process in South Sudan. Machar's deputy spokesman said the two leaders from South Sudan Opposition Alliance would attend the retreat. Manawa Peter said the April 10 meeting would focus on confidence building and helping to bring the two leaders together. Machar's participation in the Vatican meeting had been in doubt because he has been under house arrest for 2 years, most of it in South Africa. Peter said Machar would be allowed to travel to Rome and is expected to be released from house arrest at the end of the month. Peter said Vatican's initiative is aimed at building trust between President Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar. Some South Sudanese returning from refugee camps in Uganda say even though life was very hard in the camps, they learned vocational skills and are now earning a living to support their families. An official from Yei River State is urging more non-governmental organizations to train South Sudanese so that they can be employed. Daniel Friday-Martin reports for VOA from Yei Town.
23-year-old Maha Kejia runs a sewing machine in her workshop located along one of the busiest streets in the Dar es Salaam Hawkers Market. About half a dozen tailors nearby are cutting patterns as they prepare to sew dresses, sands, and bedsheets. Some ready-made school's uniforms hang on a wire in Kejia's workshop. The mother of 3 years says she fled her home in Yei at the peak of the fighting in 2016. She has been living in the Ofwa refugee settlement in northern Uganda, where she enrolled in a six-month tailoring course sponsored by an aid agency. Kejia says after hearing reports about relative peace and stability in Yei Town, she returned to Yei Town in December and used her savings of 10,000 South Sudanese pounds to start her tailoring workshop. Speaking in Kakwa, Kejia says with her new tailoring skills, she sells the clothes she sews for anywhere between 500 and 900 South Sudanese pounds.
Generally, I earn between 4,000 and 5,000 South Sudanese pounds weekly. My message to other women is that let them not think about looking for jobs, but create self-employment. Let the government provide those dealing in the clothing industry with new sewing machines and loans.
Kejia says, unlike in the past, she's able to meet her family's financial needs.
From what I sell, I am able to pay my children's tuition fees at school, pay expenses for my medical care, and also buy some food and soap for my family.
Kejia is urging government officials to restore peace and stability in Yei River State and elsewhere so that ordinary people like her can go about living their lives without fear of violence. 28-year-old Chaplain Moga is another returnee from Rhino Camp in Uganda's West Nile region, where he learned how to drive. Morgan now operates a passenger service van in Ye and says he likes his new job.
I can able to drive and I can sustain myself through driving if there's any opportunity about driving. In town, as I talk now, I'm doing a business car like just carrying people. In a day, I can get like 3,000. I use the money like for buying food at home, just that my family can eat. Other side, medical. When she's sick, I use it for buying the medicines. Then I give to her. You need to create your own business.
Moga says he wants to see the government and the opposition implement the River Talas peace deal so that other returnees can run transportation businesses along the Yeikaya Road. 42-year-old Martin Waru says he learned carpentry skills while living in a refugee camp in Uganda. Speaking in Arabic, Waru says he returned to Ye last year and now makes and sells his own furniture.
I am able to make sofa sets, beds and cupboards. A table now costs 20,000 South Sudanese pounds and a medium bed at 15,000 South Sudanese pounds. And I am able to help my school children and relatives in Uganda to address their basic needs.
Agustino Lowani is the Director General for Labor and Public Service in the Ye River State Public Service and Human Resource Ministry. Lowani says the government must provide young people with technical skills and financial resources if it wants to reduce the country's high unemployment rate. Lowani says NGOs can help by providing skills training to young people in Ye River State.
We don't rely on the public institutions. We say I have meager resources to cater forever anybody needs. So we found that youth are complaining and complaining, but they say a lot of work. So we need reserve-oriented kind of job, which is the best and which can develop this country and ourselves. My message to our donors is that training is paramount. Areas of agriculture, areas of management, areas of technical work, these are the areas that can really bring something forth so that our young men and girls are able to learn and do things for themselves.
Thousands of former South Sudanese refugees and IDPs have voluntarily returned to Ye River State, according to the State Relief and Rehabilitation Commission officials, since the peace deal was signed in September last year. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin in Ye.
The United Nations Refugee Agency estimates that globally only 1 in 4 refugee adolescents are in secondary school, while the rest, most of them female, are out of school. A Finnish organization is trying to turn the fortunes for young refugees from the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Refugees like Amina Chimanuka, who fled conflict in the Democratic Republic of Congo 4 years ago, survival, not education, is the priority. But as a refugee in Uganda's Rwanja settlement, she was among 500 students who graduated last month from a secondary school run by Finland's largest charity, Finn Church Aid. Chimanuka says she's now prepared to start her own sewing business. Previously, I would just sit home with no work. Luckily, they came and started registering us to go study. I registered, we did entry exams, I passed and went to study for 6 months. Now my life has changed because I can now earn some little money, she says. Finn Church Aid offers the students training in skills ranging from mechanics and welding to hairdressing and sandal making. Vil Vaklin, the manager of the project, says the training is equal to any found in a public school.
Our main goal is to have our diplomas recognized also in the neighboring countries such as DRC and South Sudan. Because when the time comes and these refugees are returning home, hopefully to peaceful country, then they can still boost their employability in their new home countries and help to rebuild the societies.
The United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees estimates that only half of the children in refugee camps get any education at all. In Rwanda, those who don't get admitted into secondary school suffer, says the UNHCR's Chita Kang.
If they are not able to be accepted because of competition, where will they go? They become out of school youth. And sometimes, because of having nothing to do, being redundant in the settlement, they go into alcoholism or to anything that is bad vices.
But for refugees like Chimanuka that do get to study, the education provided by Finn Church Aid is literally life-changing. Halima Athmani, For VOA News, Kamwenge, Uganda.
The head of the United Nations mission in South Sudan has praised the government and the opposition in Wau for implementing the revitalized peace deal. David Shire, who arrived in Wau town on Tuesday, told the government and opposition groups that despite a delay in implementing the terms of the peace deal, the warring parties should commit to restoring peace and stability across the country. Michael Atit has the story for VOA from Wau.
The army's chief says he traveled to Wau to follow up on the peace deal's implementation and to see firsthand the security situation in the town. David Shirar says leaders from both sides briefed him on the steps taken to build trust and confidence between the former warring parties.
We've been traveling really internationally to try and push the peace process internationally. And what I wanted to be able to do was to look at what was happening here, and it's very good. It's good to see the IO coming into town. There's workshops that are jointly being held between opposition groups and the government.
Sherrod notes certain activities scheduled to be implemented during the pre-transitional period are far behind due to financial constraints such as the contorting of forces. Despite this delay, Sherrod says peace must be implemented.
There is only one peace process. It's this peace process. There's no plan B. There's only plan A, and we need to get behind it. And by coming here and talking to the governor and hearing what's happening here on the ground and and offering unmissed support to everything that can be done on the ground to ensure that the dialogue and the trust and the confidence between all different sides is kept in a positive direction, we will have peace here.
Asked about his take on the recent escalation of violence between armed cattle keepers from neighbouring Tonji State and farmers in Wau Kwarjina County, Sherrod called it as a violation of the peace agreement. He says Tonji and Wau authorities must move quickly to resolve the matter before it is too late.
We see that as a provocation. It broke the agreement that was on the ground. We told that, and we said, and the governor agreed, and he said that they have gone to move them back. We also asked for accountability for those people who have lost their loved ones, should be able to have accountability and justice.
Shirar told an opposition delegation in Wau today that ENMIS is committed to supporting the peace process in South Sudan and called on the IO to do the same in Wau.
We need to remember where we've come from, and we need to move together as opposition as well as together with the government. Even if the situation in Juba is not resolved, there's no reason why Wau can't be the example for the rest of the country of how you can do it.
Shirar also met with a group of Wau-based civil society organizations before traveling to neighboring Gogrial State, where he's expected to meet with local authorities and reiterate his message of peace and reconciliation. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Wau.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, what is your experience in the hands of healthcare professionals in Juba? Stay tuned for testimonies from parents of children at the El Sabah Children's Hospital.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what responsibility do you take most seriously?
My family, of course. I love looking after them most time. That's a responsibility I would love to take even when I, you know, when I go up a bit, or maybe when I grow up.
My education right now is the most responsibility I take seriously, because I impart more time in it. Because I'm targeting my future right now. So if it's future, that is what I should focus on most.
I feel the responsibility that I can value and take as important in life is seeing that my vision for the fashion house I hold has come to pass as I need it.
The family. Family is the responsibility I take mostly serious. In most cases, family comes first. Say there's things in joy, pain.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus. Some parents in Juba are complaining about the poor state of medical services and hygiene in government health facilities around the capital. The executive director of a non-profit known as Organization for Responsive Governance says he lost his baby due to a lack of attention from nurses. Winnie Chirino has more for VOA from Juba.
A 32-year-old mother who prefers to be identified only as Irene for fear of reprisal from the government says she lost her child at Juba's Al-Sabah Hospital due to what she calls a lack of seriousness from medical personnel. She says her newborn was diagnosed with malaria, but when she reached the ward where her baby was admitted, she found no nurse and waited about an hour for a nurse to arrive. Irene says she later handed over the admission form and a doctor's list of medication to the nurse, but the nurse instructed her to prepare a bed and wait.
When 9 p.m. came, we went to the nurse to remind her to come and, you know, put the medicine on the baby. Again, the nurse said that she cannot put the medicine will be given at 1 a.m. in the night. At that time, I was really so worried because the condition of the baby was worsening, the body was very warm, the baby was crying all along. So we waited until 1 a.m. At 1 a.m. again, we went and called the nurse. The nurse came and told us that the medicine will be given at 6 a.m. in the morning.
Irene says when the nurse again refused to administer the medication that morning, she tracked down the doctor who blamed her for not reminding the nurse to treat the baby. After another series of setbacks, her baby died. Afterward, Irene says the doctor did not bother giving an official discharge from the hospital.
I sent for the doctor to be called to come and see the baby for the final time. There was no response. The nurse was found, but they said the only way is just to take the baby home. They did not appear when the baby died. So I was so disappointed because I know that if the nurse was to be there when we took the baby to the ward, at least my baby would have been helped.
Another mother, who we will identify as Tina for her safety, says Al-Sabah Hospital has helped her four children, but she says some of the hospital staff do not treat patients equally. Tina says women who come with their husbands are usually ushered in immediately, while other mothers who come early in the morning with their children queue in long lines. Tina says medical staff don't care about emergency cases.
Even if you have an emergency, you'll have to stand on line for long. They will look at when it's time for eating, they will close you people out, go and eat. When they finish is when they will open the doors and tell you people, hire, we continue. Another thing, the issue of medicine, I think they should change because on the counter they'll give only Panadol, these basic medicines.
Tina says some parents come to Al-Sabah Hospital with the hope of obtaining inexpensive medication, but often are forced to buy drugs from the hospital's pharmacy at the rate of a private hospital. Rajab Mohandis, executive director of the local NGO, Organization for Responsive Governance, says he took his one-week-old baby to Al-Sabah Hospital last week, but was shocked to find that after the baby was admitted, he had to wait 3 hours before a nurse came to treat his child. And Mohandi says he was shocked to see the hospital's level of hygiene.
The toilets are extremely dirty. The washrooms and most of the women bathe at night are outside, not using the bathrooms because they are very dirty. And the wards are also very dirty, especially where my child was admitted. It was a special room. It was supposed to be really very clean, but it was very dusty, first of all. It had lots of remains of drips and cotton and spills of water all over, and the smell of the room itself was terribly bad, and so it's just not safe. It's not just healthy even to have a child in that place.
Mohandi says when he went to the hospital the following morning, he found the main gate locked. He says he found a woman waiting from the inside with her dead child. He says there was another man waiting from outside who said he arrived at the hospital at 3 a.m. with his sick child, but no one opened the gate. He says he transferred his baby to another health center where the doctor said the earlier medication was not well administered. Mohandi says the attitude of medical workers at Al Sabah causes more harm than good.
Either make this hospital effectively functional or leave this hospital, so that people's hopes are not raised that there is a hospital for children where they would run to get help, and you get there and sit outside for 3 hours, you don't get access to the hospital. You go to the wards and sit for 3 hours, you don't get nurses. So either they do the work or they leave the work.
South Sudan in Focus contacted Al Sabah Hospital Director Dr. Felix Nyungura for comment on this story, but Dr. Nyungura declined to respond, asking South Sudan in Focus to first obtain permission from the Jubek State Health Ministry, which oversees Al Sabah Hospital. Dr. Gamal Hassan Gum, Director General at the Jubek State Ministry of Health, also declined to comment, saying his ministry and the hospital are still investigating the accusations published by Rajab Mohandis. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
Let us know your experience in the hands of healthcare professionals in Juba. You can contact us by sending an email to southsudan@voanews.com. Again, the email is southsudan@voanews.com. The World Health Organization and UNICEF will release the first estimates on water, sanitation and hygiene in healthcare facilities. The agencies report billions of people do not have access to wash in healthcare facilities, which raises concerns for newborns and mothers who are vulnerable to infections. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
Data compiled from 125 countries show one in four healthcare facilities around the world lacks basic water services, affecting 2 billion people. It also finds one in five healthcare facilities have no sanitation or basic toilet facilities, affecting 1.5 billion people. The World Health Organization and UN Children's Fund say clean water, sanitation, and hygiene services in health facilities can prevent the spread of infections and save lives. Unfortunately, they say, too many facilities, especially in the least developed countries, do not have these basic services. Each year, the report says 17 million women in these countries give birth in healthcare facilities where the risk of infection is high. Tom Slaymaker is a senior statistician and WASH specialist at UNICEF. He says creating good sanitary and hygienic conditions in healthcare facilities can be achieved quickly, easily, and cheaply.
Improving hand hygiene is probably the single most important thing you can do to prevent and control infections and the spread of antimicrobial resistance. It's also a very low-cost intervention. It's relatively easy to achieve, even in low-capacity settings. But in the report, we see only half of healthcare facilities worldwide have hand hygiene facilities at the point of care.
The report notes simple hand-washing stations can be installed for 10 cents a patient, and alcohol-based hand gels can easily be put in place. Maggie Montgomery from the WHO's Water, Sanitation, Hygiene and Health Unit cites Ghana as a country that has put together a national strategy for improving WASH in its healthcare facilities. She tells VOA one factor in its success lies in the excellent job the government has done in engaging communities in the project.
Over 200 local radio stations, and these radio stations act as a mechanism for community members to voice concerns, to do informal reviews of services, to get feedback. So it really also shows you how democracy and good governance, especially at the local level, can be a major driving factor in improving services.
WHO and UNICEF researchers note more than 1 million deaths each year are linked with unclean births. They say infections account for 26% of neonatal deaths and 11% of maternal mortality. They call these statistics alarming, especially as many of the deaths are preventable by providing safe water, toilets, and hand washing in healthcare facilities. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Still on health matters, Jonglei state officials say TB cases are on the rise in the state. Hundreds of patients are being treated for TB at health centers across the state, according to health coordinator in Jonglei State. A doctor at Bor Civil Hospital says the disease is spreading because the population does not know how to prevent the spread of TB. Deng Gai Deng has the story for VOA from Bor.
47-year-old John Ayur lays on a mat under a tree at his home in Bor's Nigil neighborhood. A cup of water and a polythene bag containing medicine was placed by his side. Four family members sit next to him, talking and cracking jokes. Ayur says he was diagnosed with TB 3 months ago.
I was in Juba, but actually I was not aware of this sickness. I thought it is a different disease that got me in Juba. So I just fall sick in Juba because I was going with the team with Koryom the other time. So I fall sick there. After I was brought here to Bor on date 9 of March, I came to realize that I have ulcers and my head was pain. I said, maybe I have TB. Let me go for TB. Then I went for a test. I said, I need to be tested with hepatitis B. So hepatitis B was found negative, but TB was found positive. So I was given medicine.
Tuberculosis is transmitted through droplets expelled into the air by an infected person during normal breathing, while talking, sneezing, or coughing, mostly coughing. A young match coordinates the treatment for TB patients in Jonglei State.
We have a case of TB because we have two centers. We have Panyagor and Bor State Hospital, but we have patients of the TB. It can reach 500 and something, by the way, right now on the treatment, yeah.
Dr. Mayan Mayoljuk at Bor State Hospital says TB is a highly contagious disease that often attacks the lungs. It can also spread to other parts of the body, like the brain and spine. Dr. Mayol says TB is spreading in Jonglei State because most people either do not know how to prevent its spread or simply ignore the measures they have been told about.
When we treat a patient that is suffering from TB and then the patient default, run away before he or she complete the treatment, then went back to the community, then there is a high chance that is going to spread the microbacterium, which is responsible for the tuberculosis infection.
That combined with the fact that South Sudanese culture encourages the practice of sharing utensils, cups, and plates while eating meals, according to Dr. Mayol, puts many people at risk of being infected.
There's need for you to use your own spoon. And also, brother or sister have to use a different spoon. We don't share one spoon. We don't need to share one cup when drinking water. We don't want to overcrowd the house. When we are making overcrowding of the house, also we are prone to be infected with the disease. Also, when we are coughing, you need to cover your mouth when you are coughing.
Mayol says while tuberculosis can be deadly, it is a curable disease.
If you neglect the treatment, this disease, you can die of it. Not only you, but you can infect it, the members of the family, because you will be coughing there, then those microorganisms can spread easily. You can also infect it, the friends. Your friends also, that you are staying with them, you can infect them.
March says there are enough drugs available at Bor Hospital to treat TB, but many patients avoid taking the medicine. TB patient John Ayur says after being on the medicine for 3 months now, he feels better.
Before I was very sick, you cannot see me. But now my body is okay, unless it's only sometime condition of feeding, because we know the condition of Jonglei. And not Jonglei, also Sudan. Actually, this medicine, they just test like the other medicine, but the meter, they are very big, and you swallow three at the same time.
Ayur strongly advises people who think they might have TB to seek medical attention and to make sure they take their medication regularly. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng, reporting from Bor. All
right. That's our show for this Wednesday, and we'll leave you now with the song Jere Jere by Dynamic. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could be here with us. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Jere, jere, jere.
Sunu bata, nasi maderu geni sawa. Suwata.